Hello and welcome to Dishing Up. I'm Millie.
And I'm Mariam. We're part of Larder, a magazine where we believe who you are is what you eat.
In this series, we're going to take you on a food tour around the world.
In each episode, we'll be choosing a new country to focus on and speaking to renowned chefs from that country about their earliest memories of cooking and what makes their food so delicious.
Come with us on this journey to learn about traditional food from all corners of the globe. We'll be going to places like the Gambia, Azerbaijan, Mexico, and Malta. Leave behind everything you know about food. We're headed off the beaten track.
So grab a knife and a fork, because this is Dishing Up. On today's episode, we're headed to the capital of flamenco dancing and bullfighting, Spain. Situated in southern Europe, Spain is known for its culture, delicious food, iconic landmarks, and its tomato festival.
Spanish cuisine is heavily influenced by its geography. It's surrounded by the Mediterranean Sea, making it famous for its seafood dishes. Throughout history and even now, food has been essential for Spaniards.
The national dish of Spain is paella. It originated in the coastal city of Valencia, and there are countless variations of the one-pan dish.
However, there are a few essential elements to it. For example, its base of onions, carrots, garlic and bell peppers, as well as the rice and saffron, which gives it the yellow colour.
In the studio with us today, we have Omar Alaboy, an incredible chef from Spain.
Omar has achieved a lot as a young chef. He worked in Gordon Ramsay's restaurant, Maze, before opening his first restaurant, Tapas Revolution, in Westfield in 2010.
He's appeared on Saturday Kitchen many times, sharing his love for the Spanish cuisine, and has released three cookbooks. His most recent, called Paella, showcases the beauty of the traditional one-pan dish. Omar, welcome to Dishing Up. We're so excited to have you with us today. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me.
Perfect. So we're going to get stuck right in. Do you mind telling us a bit about your earliest memories of food?
Well, in fact, my first memory was my mum cooking in the kitchen. She was baking, really, a creme caramel. And I still have that very vivid memory of I must have been sort of sitting in the floor or around the floor area, because I remember the oven being there quite in front of me. My mum, you know, just whisking eggs and baking this creme caramel. I still can smell it today. And it was probably since then that that my passion for food ignited, because I've always wanted to be in the kitchen with her, just helping her out, as I said, doing really basic jobs like whisking eggs and participating. You know, I sort of took that as a hobby. Every evening we would go home after playing football, being at school and all of those things, and just cooking dinner. That became my... The thing that I love doing the most. And probably, you know, about when I was 8 years old, I became the head chef of the kitchen of our home. And sort of took over and started making dinner for myself. I already handled the fire, the pans, and so on. So they were very happy, obviously, at home to yeah. Let me do that. And so yes, always, I think my earliest... relationship with food was, I would say, eventful for two reasons. One, from this passion of cooking and flavor and so on, obviously came through a love for flavor. But as well, I come from a family where we gathered a lot over the weekends. You know, all of my grandparents, aunts, parents, brothers, sisters, we all lived in Madrid. So it was very common for us to just meet every weekend. Now I live in London, but they still do it every weekend. Sweet. And everybody would bring some food and so on. So those, you know, food has always been very present. And not just what it gives you in terms of the fulfillment from my side of flavor and so on, but as a really fundamental part in our little community as a family and bringing us together.
And who was it that first taught you? Was it your mum? Was it watching her?
Watching my mum and you know, and myself, self-taught in that way, always reading cookery books. And two of my aunts, so my mum's sister and the wife of the brother of my dad, her name was Marisa and Emilia. they are, still are, phenomenal. And they were way better cooks than my mum is.
Oh.
My mum loved baking, but she wasn't the greatest of cooks. That's probably why I took over quite early as well. But so they've always been very important in my career and my interest and what they do, what how they did it. I would always accompany them in the kitchen. And when I was 6 years old, I got my first cookery book, which was called My First Cookery Book. And I got it for Christmas. And it was very simple recipes, as you can imagine, such as how to make a pizza with a slice of bread. You know, really simple things. But as a six-year-old, it was fantastic how to make madeleines. I just baked with my son this morning, you know, before going to school. That's how passionate cooks they've become as well. They've seen it at the end. It's about what you see. And they're big foodies too.
Would you say your family really encouraged you then to take up cooking?
Without a doubt. They've never opposed to it, which is unusual. But my parents were very, you know, they knew it was my gift and that and they supported it. What they did, though, was push me to finish my high school. Mm-hmm. So I would go 9 to 5 to high school and then 6 to 10 p.m. to my cookery classes.
Wow.
And I did that for a year in traditional Spanish cooking. So I wanted to get in there, get in the professional cooking, and that's how I started as a kitchen porter and building my way up.
What was your first job?
It was as a kitchen porter. Well, no, I'm lying. I did some temporary jobs, like over the weekend, agency jobs. And then my first real job was as a kitchen porter in an American restaurant called Chicago Downtown Pizza, which was very near from where I live with my parents. You know, it was an American restaurant, but quite unusual. It was all homemade. Even the burger buns were homemade, which that's
really rare, yeah, isn't it?
Very rare. I tell you, not even good restaurants today buy the bread. They would outsource it from a decent bakery. So yeah, it was a really great experience. And after a year, I move on.
I'm surprised you lasted a year.
Yeah.
I used to do it and it was disgusting. And you know, you just come home smelling like a dishwasher. It was awful.
Well, I think cooking is worst in
really?
Terms of the smell. Yeah. If you are there by the grill, by the fryers, that is a smell, which I tell you something, which is quite common for chefs, is that when you are there in the kitchen all the time, you wouldn't like to go home and cook because you have a bit of a phobia in a way. It's like you just can't smell food being cooked. You like eating, but not food being cooked. That's when you are there 6 days a week, 16 hours a day. You know, the last thing you want when you get home is cooking or smelling food. You know, for me, always, I'm a motorbike rider. And for me, the end of the day is always kind of a good ride back home and a good shower. And suddenly you're a brand new person.
Well, Omar, as such a renowned chef, we're curious. What's one ingredient you couldn't live without?
Probably olive oil.
Oh.
I would think, yeah, everything sort of starts with olive oil. In our cuisine, mainly in Spanish Mediterranean cuisines, you know, whether it's raw in salads or on top of a pan con tomate, toasted bread with some tomato and garlic, you know, or just cooking. I think food wouldn't be the same without it. Even use it in your own skin. I always tell my wife, I said, you spend so much money in lotions and creams. I say, you have the greatest here.
Bit slimy though.
No, but I like it personally.
Is that your skincare routine?
I do it quite often, I have to say. Yeah, I use a good Spanish extra virgin olive oil. Not too much because it does smell. But, you know, I use it a lot in my hands. Sometimes I just, you know, I go to the gym And from the years of rough skin, of handling hot things and pans, my hands are not the softest. So, you know, a drop of olive oil and you just shake it and it sort of absorbs very quickly. I personally really like it. And I know a lot of other chefs that do it too.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. We'll have to try it. What is so special about the food in Madrid specifically compared to the rest of Spain?
So Madrid cuisine, which is a great question because a lot of people always talks about Spanish cuisine. Mm-hmm. And Spanish cuisine is a concept that we exclusively use outside of the borders of Spain. Within Spain, it's always regional cuisine. It's Catalonian cuisine, it's Basque cuisine, it's Madrid cuisine, and so on. So well done. Our cuisine in Madrid, excuse me, it's quite colourful. Colourful in that being the capital, we've absorbed from every other region. So I feel within a Spanish cuisine, Madrid cuisine is the one that has absorbed the most from all the regions. But what's very typical from us and sort of that develop in the most recent sort of 70 years is was that Madrid was under siege by the fascists because Madrid was communist during the Civil War. We never participated in the World War because we had our own civil war internally. And as a result, it developed a cuisine which was made with very humble ingredients. And generally, it was made with offcuts. You know, you wouldn't see ribeyes being transported around Madrid. You know, it was all testicles. It was all, you know, offal, lungs, hearts, intestines, tripe, and so on. And from... You know, I think that is, in fact, our most traditional recipes. And I grew up eating it, and I absolutely love it. I know it's not very British. You know, they are not into their offal as much as we are in the rest of Spain, generally, that we eat quite a lot, but in Madrid more so. So that's stews made with offal. It's what's so special about Madrid cuisine.
Is there a specific type of stew that it's usually put with?
Plenty. Always done with pulses, all sorts of beans. Spain is a big legumes consumer. We grow a lot and we consume a lot. And it's a really important element why, I'm jumping from one thing to another, but why Spanish cuisine is considered one of the healthiest in the world. And I don't know if you know, but Spain is the healthiest country in the world today. And wow. It's been for the last 5 years, above Italy and Japan. And if you read the reports, which are Bloomberg is who makes them, one of the aspects is about the food is really important. How we eat, the fact that we eat it a bit more post, slightly slower, that we talk while we eat, you know, we don't just chuck it down our throat, and it mentions as well the fact that we consume quite a lot of legumes, which are very rich in iron. It takes time to absorb, and they are full of fiber and very healthy for you. And plenty of stews, whether it is with chickpeas, like cocido madrileño, Madrid stew, hot pot will be the translation. It's very, you know, it's made with chickpeas. We use red kidney beans, plenty of butter beans. You know, we're quite big on our different beans. So, for example, I tell you one that is tripe. You know, we cook it very slowly. Always, all these stews are always long and slow, 3-4 hours. We'll cook it with dried peppers, plenty of vegetables, chickpeas, generally, snails as well. We like our snails, and a few chilies as well. Even though Madrid cuisine is not spicy, or Spanish cuisine in general is not spicy at all. When we talk about chili, it's a tiny bit. It's not like Indian cuisine, or other spiced Asian cuisines or even South American cuisines as well. They love it. We just have a South American girl from Colombia that came to our house as an au pair, just came 3 days ago. And the first thing she asked on the first meal that we offer was, do you have anything spicy? Yeah, and, like chili oil or, chili oil or Tabasco, just anything. You know, there's some cultures that they just don't eat it. If it's like salt for us here in Britain.
Mm. And Omar, do you think Spanish food is authentically represented in the UK?
Yes, I think it is. It's quite advanced. I think for a matter of proximity and the fact that it's quite a few of us here in the UK. So people like myself, José Pizarro, Nieves Barragán, plenty of other chefs that has always put an effort in bringing good produce from Spain, pushing our own suppliers to not just bring, the usuals, bring things which are a bit more regional and artisan as well. So, Spanish cuisine is quite ingredient-led. And in many cases, we don't do much to it. We let the ingredient shine. That's why Spanish cuisine could be seen as quite subtle, because we don't like to hide the natural flavor of the products. And in many cuisines, that is done to hide deficiencies. It's very, very common. In fact, spice everything up, put a lot of vinegars and pickles and things like that to make it a bit more attractive. But the reality in Spain, because we are blessed with a lot of sun and a warm weather, the reality is that the produce is super rich in flavor and vast in variety.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. Yeah. Why ruin something that's already good? Mm. Can you tell us about your favourite? If you had to pick a sort of traditional Spanish dish, what would be your favourite?
Well, there is the dish that, if it was, how you call it, your last meal. No, if I was to die tomorrow, what would I have today? There is this dish called cocochas al pil pil, which is, they are the cod fish throats, okay? Which you don't find here in the UK anywhere because they are all sent to Spain and Japan. They are 3-4 times the price of a normal loin of cod, but they are super succulent and velvety in texture, a bit viscous. It's a texture that is sensational, and it has a lot of fat content within. And the recipe itself, again, is very simple. We create a hot mayonnaise with, that's what it is in essence, but what we do is in extra virgin olive oil, we fry garlic and chili, dry chili, until it's golden, and then we let it cool down. When it's cooled down, we put the cod throats inside the oil, and we warm it up in very low heat while we shake the pan. And these cod throats start releasing that fat. And with the shaking of the pan, starts emulsifying as if it was a mayonnaise. And it starts building up until it becomes sort of a creamy, white, yellowish sauce. And it's delicious. And to me, that is the best dish there is in this world.
Do you know why they send it to Japan?
Because they appreciate it too.
What do you know what they make with it?
I think they cook it more frequently. They don't eat it as sushi. They cook it. And in the grill, they are amazing. Deep fried are amazing. I mean, you can do so many things with it. And Spain and Japan, we are the largest consumers of fish in the world. And in fact, Spain consumes 5 times more fish than the UK, and we're a smaller country. So I think it's something like 40% of the UK's catch goes to Spain every year. Is sent. We are one of your biggest customers, if not the biggest. Probably Italians do import a lot. You have incredible fish here, and people is not used to eating it. It's quite funny. There is no fishmongers anywhere, and what you eat is second class, unfortunately. What we eat, I include myself, but anyway, I buy at home from the restaurant, I have to say. I get the supplier to deliver top quality fish to my house. But it's a shame that having so much fish, being an island, that the quality of the fish you find, both in fishmongers and supermarkets, is so poor. You know, and then when they go to Spain, they said, wow, it's incredible. Well, it comes from your home. but as well, it makes us the biggest pirates. You know, we extend our frontiers as far as we can reach in search of catch, which has brought us historically plenty of battles, both with British, Canadians, and all sorts, Moroccans, all our neighbours. Portuguese love their fish too, so they are involved in there. Yes.
And Emma, is there a dish from Spain that you wish more people knew about?
Oh, yes. More than a dish, I think more in general. I think people, it's quite a stack in their own ways, and a lot of British, you know, that they go to Spain, 17 million every year, they still just continue to go to their full English breakfast places and so on, and discover very little. And the thing is, because there is so many places still undiscovered, Brits know a lot of the cuisine from the coasts, you know, from the costas. At the end, you guys love going on holidays to Spain, enjoy the sun.
It's warm, I know, especially in this time of year.
All of us, I include myself.
My parents just went to Gibraltar, nice. And they were driving down the coast. But again, I was going to say that, you know, whenever people from Britain come, especially we go to Madrid and Barcelona, Valencia, mm-hmm. you know, there are so many other places that we should, you know, tap into.
Completely. And did your parents go by car?
They did. They drove for the first time.
Great journey. I mean, that I would invite everyone to do that.
To drive to Spain.
Just drive to Spain. Crossing Calais to France. You know, buy a bit of French wine. Well, on your way back. Don't buy anything on your way in, excuse me. and you know, go through Catalonia, Valencia, Murcia, if you're going down south to Andalusia. You know, whatever the journey, it's sensational. And you don't have to drive for 4 hours or anything. Just do an hour a day. It's not all about Benidorm's beach. There is so many more beautiful beaches that you can go to through that journey that you'll be mesmerized. It will feel like the Caribbean of Europe.
I think as British people, I think we have trouble with relaxing, and that's our main issue. We can never just sit in one place. We're always on the move, we're always on the go. And I think that's the beauty about Spain, that whenever I've been, it's so relaxed and you really take your time and there's not a lot of rush.
It's a slower pace of living, definitely. Yeah. I went to Seville last year and it was just stunning, and they had oranges on the trees and people sitting out drinking coffee in the terraces, and it was just beautiful.
No, I think the lifestyle is absolutely what makes Spain great, why so many people want to live there, why so many British retire in Spain. It's you know, it's not just the food. that is lower pace. I think it may sound arrogant, and I don't want it to sound like that, but I think we, within our culture, we've learned how to live a good life earlier than here.
Yes, no, absolutely.
And to appreciate the things that are really important in life, and it's not all work and all, you know, and it's just the slower is better, more social interaction, coming back again to why we are there. The longest living country, not longest living country, how you say it, is the healthiest country in the world where people live the longest. Part is that social element, the fact that we talk all the time, our relationships are strong, and we keep them and maintain them.
And would you say a lot of this culture comes around food in Spain, getting together over a meal?
Well, I think food has evolved to satisfy our needs of socializing. I think socializing came first. And then I said, why tapas? No? I said, why they don't eat main courses? And I think it's a bit of that. We like the sharing aspect. Because it brings us together. Eating from the same plate brings you together. You know, if you were there on the side of the table, me and here, you with your large plate of pasta, me with mine, you know, there is something a bit more fun and interactive and entertaining of having six different dishes mm-hmm. that we are sharing between us. And in many occasions, we are standing up while we do it, you know, which is quite a tradition, eating standing up in bars in Spain. If you've gone, you know, to Spain, you may have seen it. And we just take our time, and that's how we're meeting. Here, people meet for a pint, right?
Mm, yeah.
In Spain, we meet for tapas. That says it all. I read a restaurant industry report recently that said that 50% of all menus in new restaurant openings, independently of their cuisine, had some sort of tapas or sharing plates or sharing dishes in their menu. 50%, which tells you it's no longer a trend. Mm, you know, yeah. It's now becoming a tradition. That is how people enjoy connecting with others.
And for this part of the podcast, we'd like you to imagine you're preparing a dinner party menu full of all of your favourite Spanish dishes. So what are you having for starter, main, dessert, and then to drink?
Well, I mean, it could be anything, to be completely frank. It's very hard to choose favourites. And in fact, probably my favourite thing is to keep it varied and try new things and so on. Paella has to be a main course, that's for sure. That's a favorite. It feeds all the family from one big dish that again brings us all together. Why that? You know, and
absolutely.
It's very impactful. And then in a Spanish meal, another fix will be a salad. Sometimes we are criticized by vegetarians and vegans that, you know, we don't eat many vegetables. Yes, we do. But we eat it in the way of salad. Salad is a tradition in Spain. In every meal, we have salad twice a day, for lunch and for dinner. And then there should be some sort of salad in the table. My mom is the queen of salad. She would be making that. I'll be cooking the paella. Mm. My aunts will be bringing some, maybe a Spanish omelette, some starters, things to share, you know, and as well they would bring some new things that they've heard of seen it and tried. You know, we are very adventurous in that respect, I have to say. We you know, our menus are never fixed. Now my uncle has started sort of taking, because you know I have Indian heritage. My dad is born in Mumbai. My dad is from my grandfather is the real Indian, but he didn't pass on the culinary skills. He wasn't that much of a chef. But my uncle, has started cooking Indian cuisine. Has become such an expert. He may bring a biryani to side by side with the paella or something. And you know, for dessert, I think some sort of cake. Mm-hmm. Made generally with eggs, maybe a tart. And I tell you something quite interesting as well, since you asked me about wine as well. It just came to my head. But there is, the culture of eating sweets and desserts, it's quite recent in history for two reasons. One is that there was no sugar before. So that's quite a recent thing in history. And the other was that, you know, generally what we know of sweet treats, and so now we have cookies and we have fancy treats, but before it was all about sponge cakes and sort of biscuits. That's, you know, puff pastries. It was about pastry. That you know, whether you go to France, Italy, or in the rest of the world, you know, it's always been about some sort of a starch with some honey. And some sweetener. And historically, the chickens were always controlled by the landlords, and particularly those who had vineyards, because how you purify and clarify the wine is by using the egg whites. So you make wines before were very cloudy and very brute, very harsh. You know, and it was when they started clarifying them that they became more like the wines we know today, you know, more clinical, more cleaner. pure. And so they would always give the egg yolks to the nuns in the convents, in the case of Spain. And they would always do sweet treats to coincide with whatever special religious festivity there was. That's why in Spain most sweet treats have always a religious connotation. Mm. In Easter we do some things. In depending on the time of the year, we do some sweets or the others. And that's where it comes from. The sweet traditions always come as a religious one. And coming back to your question of what could be maybe a tarta de Santiago, an almond cake with eggs, almonds, flourless, by the way, sugar, a bit of rum, a bit of lemon zest, a bit of cinnamon, and that's all it has. And eggs, as I said, very delicious. And then to drink, it'll have to be wine. Mm-hmm. Spain is as well the largest producer of wine by volume, I think, this year again. And so maybe a good Ribera del Duero, which is, to me, my favorite kind of wines, more than Rioja, even though Riojas are stunning as well. We have good wines all across the country, I have to say.
Oh, wow, that sounds amazing. Can we come?
I know, I'm hungry. I'll send you that. Well, thank you so much. Have you got any fun projects coming up?
Well, I am doing some cookery courses at home.
Fun.
Yes, in my own home. As I'm no longer involved in the restaurants, and I just want to keep in contact with food, and teaching people is something I love. In fact, I go to uni as well to give some classes, but these cookery courses at home are great. We cook 10 dishes.
Wow.
We do it from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. We end up eating a meal. You can find all the details in my own website for those who are interested and you live in London, because I live in Northwest London. And that's what I do. So I'm really enjoying. I did some supper clubs during the summer, which I am looking
lovely.
Forward to doing again with the good weather, as well, turning my home into a restaurant. My wife loves doing these things too, as well. So that's we get along well in that respect, in getting people together. I am launching my latest cookbook, Paella, that you said, now in Spain and Germany, in Spanish and German, excuse me, in early spring. So that will take me quite a lot of time as well to promote, and generally open to work.
That sounds amazing.
So much to look forward to.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Dishing Up. It's been so good to have you. This has been amazing.
It's been my pleasure and my honour to be the first guest.
Thank you, Omar. Where can people find you?
Social media, Instagram, The Spanish Chef or Omar Ali Boy, and my website, thespanishchef.com. And in case somebody's been tempted to cook Spanish food, my main business is the online deli. So if you go to my website, it's a shop. You can buy all the Spanish ingredients that are hard to find in supermarkets, and you get them delivered in 48 hours anywhere in mainland UK. So that there is no excuse not to cook some good Spanish dishes.
Well, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
We've been your hosts, Millie and Mariam.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's episode of Dishing Up.
Dishing Up is produced by Mariam Aziz, Millie Jackson and Hannah Rashbass, with technical support from Maria Martinez Ugarteceya.
Special thanks to Biscuit Town for our fabulous jingle. Please join us again for another tasty episode on Dishing Up.
Until then, keep cooking.
And remember, who you are is what you eat.
Bye.